You are listening to the Hiking Radio Network, where we talk the walk with shows by hikers about hikers for everybody.
The Hiking Radio Network? If you haven't checked it out yet, it's time that you do. You will find links to the other shows in my show notes as well, but you got to go check them out. Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail, the ultimate midlife crisis. That's Steve Adams, and he has literally hundreds of episodes for you to binge. He talks to hikers who have thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, among other things. Check out Jester's Section Hiker podcast. She talks to hikers that are out there taking on these long trails just one section at a time. And go dance upon the earth with Anna Mudbutt on the Trail Dames podcast. I've had the honor of being on her podcast and vice versa. And stay tuned for new shows that we're going to be adding to the network soon. Hey guys, I know we all really love to put those miles in on the trail. And even if you have amazing trail runners, the best boots on the planet, you're still going to have foot pain. Let's be honest. Anytime you do that kind of serious hiking with, you know, 20 or more extra pounds on your back, your feet are going to tell you about it. One of the things that I have found recently that I love to use is Myoderm. Myoderm is a CBD-infused cream that you can use for pain relief. My favorite is the foot cream because my feet feel it when I do these long hikes. And I don't want to give up the hiking. It's literally half an ounce. So it's something that is not going to take up a bunch of your pack to take this along. But oh my gosh, at the end of a long day of hiking and you get to peel those socks off and give yourself a nice foot rub, your feet are going to thank you for it. I know mine do. It's not greasy, which is kind of a big deal to me. I don't like using greasy stuff on my skin. And this absorbs very quickly. Treat your feet right. There's going to be a link for you in the show notes. It's myoderm.com. Make sure you use the coupon code HIKING at checkout and you'll get 20% off your first order. It does help support the show, so thank you for that in advance. Back to the show.
Guess what? We have a Hiking Radio Network trading post now. At the trading post, you can find t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups with your favorite show's logo on it. Yes, you can find some Hiking Unfiltered things there. I'm so excited about that. But you can also find one with Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail. You can find just Hiking Radio Network and anything that you buy there on the Hiking Radio Network trading post does go to help support our shows and help us to bring you more content. So thank you in advance for doing some retail therapy. Check it out. There'll be a link for you in the show notes.
Welcome to Hiking Unfiltered, getting real on the trail. I am Courtney, aka Unfiltered, and we're here to explore the trails together. We'll dive into not just the how-to of hiking, but also the why. Welcome. Welcome to episode number 51 of Hiking Unfiltered, getting real on the trail. I'm your host, Unfiltered, and today I'm going to be talking to a remarkable young woman who has taken on a really interesting adventure. Her name is Emily Pennington, and she's the author of the new book, Feral. Today, she's going to be answering the question, what is it like to hike in every U.S. national park? Welcome to the show, Emily Pennington. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to be here.
Absolutely. So I like to ask everybody, and I don't know if because you haven't necessarily done the traditional through hike type of experience, but do you have a trail name?
I don't really have a trail name. I always joke that my trail name is Gremlin, but that's also kind of my nickname in life. But I have done the JMT actually. So I did 25 days in the Sierra Nevadas in 2021, actually. So not too long after I finished writing the book.
Okay, gotcha. So that one wasn't included in your book?
No, that was a totally different adventure. That was like my next big project. I was like, okay, I just did this huge van trip for 12 months. How do I up the ante, but also like make it a little bit more low tech and totally, you know, ditch cell service for 3 weeks and do the whole through hiking thing, which was amazing.
Right. Awesome. So I'm sorry, I didn't know about your DMT experience. Didn't mean for that to be insulting. I can't talk, to be honest. I haven't through hiked anything. So I'm not exactly a through hiker myself. I'm an aspiring through hiker. I hang out with through hikers, but I haven't actually through hiked technically a trail. So tell me about how you even got started in hiking. Has this been a thing for you since childhood? Is it just a recent development that you decided I'm going to go out there and conquer some mountains? Tell me about your experience.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. People are generally pretty surprised to learn that I actually did not grow up in an outdoorsy family. I grew up in suburban Houston, which for anyone who knows Texas geography will know that that is in like the flat, kind of swampy eastern side of the state, not like the northern part where you have like Palo Duro Canyon and stuff. And, you know, I was like a theater kid. I was like a weird artsy kid. I wanted to like learn tap dancing and ballet. And so I was always very like physical and I was always very creative. But it wasn't until I was 28 years old or 29 when I was actually dating a guy who introduced me to backpacking and heading out into the national parks on weekend adventures. And I'm so privileged to live in Los Angeles now. So we were able to go places like Yosemite and Sequoia for, you know, a quick 2-day or 3-day trip. And that was really magical and completely upended my entire life. And then that breakup is actually what instigated the book Feral that I just wrote. And so I actually write a little bit about that breakup and also my first kind of misadventure backpacking in which I packed all of the wrong gear and still had a fabulous time.
Yeah, that's the story. That, I mean, I don't think I have talked to any hikers, even the hikers now who have like thousands and thousands of miles behind them, who didn't start out with like the worst gear, the most inappropriate footwear, you know, the heaviest backpack. I'm still working on having a lighter, more efficient, you know, backpack myself. And one of the I'm going to throw my husband under the bus. One of my issues with that is that my husband is a gearhead.
Oh, dear.
And he packs like 6 of everything just in case. So we end up with like 35-pound backpacks for a 2-day hike. So it's a little bit crazy. So you went to Yosemite and you went to the Sequoias. The Sequoias are amazing. So when you went there and you had these experiences and you just described that was sort of like a magical experience for you. Did you feel, tell me a little bit more about your, like, what does that mean to you? What's a magical experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that when you grow up as a sensitive and a creative kid, and then, you know, you move to a big city hoping to find other like-minded individuals, I think that so often, you know, the experience that you have as an adult is twofold. And that is, you meet a lot of like amazing creatives, or maybe you get involved in some projects that are very, you know, soul stirring and fulfilling. But then you're also kind of tamped down by all of the somatic eccentricities of city life that can be really jarring, you know, energetically. And so I think that there was something like, there was something pure and easy about the magic that I found in the wilderness. There was something really timeless and ancient, and like it felt simultaneously dangerous because, you know, you are surviving with whatever you carry in on your back, but it also felt like seeing the alpenglow at sunrise for the first time across the Sierra Nevada is some important part of our birthright that I felt like I had been denied. And so I feel like I was one of those people who was just instantly hooked on their first backpacking trip. I feel like there was this friendliness that you could sense from other hikers on the trail. There was this otherworldly beauty that was not distracted by your cell phone going off or a car whizzing by. And there was this sense of accomplishment in a physical way that I think, especially as women, we often don't get to experience as much in city life. And that is the sensation of carrying everything that you literally need on your back and then getting to this beautiful viewpoint where maybe you finally get to pitch your tent.
That you, so you made some really good points in there. I love the way the imagery that you set up with the sunrise. I think that one of the things that we lose, especially when we are living a city life, is the natural rhythm of sunrise and sunset. And that's one of the things, it's funny because when you spend a lot of time in the hiker community, you'll hear about hiker midnight, which is basically like a half hour past sunset, whenever sunset happens to be. And it's, I have always been more of a morning person anyway. So even with artificial lighting and everything, 9:30, 10 o'clock is kind of my max, unless there's something amazing going on that I've got, you know, adrenaline up for or whatever. So I tend to be a little bit more connected, but even still, that's a good couple of hours past, you know, sunset and everything like that. And I'm typically up 45 minutes or so before sunrise most days. So when I have experienced that, being out in the woods and sleeping for several nights in a row out in the woods and everything like that, where it's amazing to me how quickly my body responds to that version of light. Right. It's like we are so bombarded with all this artificial light that our brain doesn't know what to do with it. And then we go out there and it's like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. Yeah. But the other thing that I would like to circle back to was the connection to our bodies, because I think probably more so in women than in men, but men who are living a very urban life will have similar issues. But I think in women more than men, we tend to be, unless we're like going through something crazy like childbirth, we tend to be very disconnected from our bodies. So tell me about some of your experience with feeling more of that connection, that somatic connection.
Yeah. So I think I briefly touch on this in the book as well, but, you know, I'm someone who in college developed an eating disorder. And so becoming more physically active, especially in a space like the outdoors, where it literally does not matter what you look like. You might not look in a mirror for a week at a time. You might not shower for like 7 days or 8 days. And you are quite literally self-supporting in a very immediate physical way by carrying your food and your shelter and all of your warm clothes and sleeping bag on your back. And so I've heard a lot of women and also like trans and kind of gender non-binary people talk about how the outdoors can be this really empowering place because the normal gender and body dynamics that we face in an urban environment kind of disappear almost immediately when you're out in the wilderness. I think I have a line in my book that's something like the outdoors didn't care if I was young or old, rich or poor. They only cared if I was competent. And I think that there's something oddly soothing about that. There's something that I think is really, I don't know, important, and like it puts my mind at ease to know that all I have to do is kind of adhere to the rules and pack the correct gear. And I don't have to like also be pretty and also be charming and also wear makeup and also be a size zero. You know, I don't have to do all these things that we might feel like we have to do in a city because of, you know, media, society, job pressure, all the other things that we're constantly facing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So when you had this breakup, I know that was the catalyst to get you out there and doing more of this type of stuff. you decided that you were going to go out and hike in every national park. Is that correct?
Yes.
So where did you start?
So being the type A overachiever that I am, I decided to start very practically. I had a little minivan that I built out myself with a friend named Gizmo. And I started by...
Wait. Mm-hmm. Gizmo and Gremlin?
Yeah. Yes.
You need to keep Gremlin. That's got to be your trail name.
I think
name.
It has to be my trail name. I got a bumper sticker thing that I bought on Etsy the other day that I put on my ski helmet that says Goblin Mode Activated. And it's like front and center on my ski helmet. For when I go skiing, now I'm really thrilled about it.
That's awesome. I'm sorry, I had to interrupt.
No,
go
it's
ahead.
Okay. I should get a Gizmo one. So I tricked out my minivan. I wanted like something that was like a little cheaper and smaller and more fuel efficient than these huge sprinters that you see everywhere on Instagram. But honestly, like I really just wanted to do something that felt manageable. Like as someone with anxiety, I wanted to do something manageable, a park that I'd been to before, and also a park that was like 3 hours from my house, should anything happen or I want to, you know, go back to Target and buy something. So so I went to Joshua Tree for 3 nights. It was a really cold winter. There was actually snow in the park that year that stayed on the ground for a few days. And it was, you know, it was like a 3-night sub-freezing temperatures inside my van at night in the desert, kind of shakedown adventure. But I, much to your point, like I did actually go to bed quite early because when it's dark at 5 or 6 p.m. and it's, you know, 30 degrees in your living room, it's kind of time to bundle up and go to sleep. Right. I saw a lot of really gorgeous desert sunrises. And from there, I kind of branched out and did a couple more California parks. I did Pinnacles and Death Valley. And then I decided to do kind of a big Southwest loop where I went to, you know, Carlsbad Caverns and Big Bend, like went to West Texas, came back around, did Petrified Forest and Guadalupe Mountains and a lot of those parks that are kind of more southern and really good for winter.
Mm. Okay, gotcha. So what did you find was the most unexpected landscape that you got to explore?
I mean, the national parks in the U.S. are so just spectacularly diverse that it's always really hard to pick one. I think coming from East Texas, where everything is really flat, so much so that it was like the bane of my existence growing up. I think it was really surprising to me, having never been to West Texas, to get to go to Big Bend, because the Chisos Mountains, which are the primary mountain range in the center of the park, they are pretty tall. I want to say they're 7,000 or 8,000 feet tall. And they have conifers, they get snow, they have black bears. They're so tall that they get black bears, and they're in the middle of the Chihuahuan Desert. So it's not the kind of mountain range that you would picture just sprouting up out of this flat, arid desert landscape. But they're really spectacular. And so I think getting to hike in a, I don't want to say alpine environment, but getting to hike in a more mountainous environment that I'm accustomed to, you know, from living in California for so long, while simultaneously enjoying the natural hot springs, the really incredible river canyons that are down in Big Bend, and also just some spectacular desert backcountry car camping that's in the area. I'm such a big sucker for parks that aren't just hiking. I love multi-sport national parks. And so I feel like this was the best of all worlds. You know, you could like do really cool car camping. You could also backpack. You could canoe. I'm sure there's rock climbing there because some of the rock walls are amazing. The hiking is spectacular. It's just like an all around great park, and it's so far flung as well. I think it has some of the darkest night skies in the world. It's really far out.
So As you made your way around, did you actually manage your goal, to hit your goal?
Not in the allotted 1 year.
Okay.
So my white whale of the park trip with American Samoa. And ironically,
okay,
living in California, if I had started with Hawaii and American Samoa in the winter, because those are good winter parks, they're tropical,
I would have
gotten it done. But I wanted to end with the islands because I thought that would be such a nice vacation for myself after running my body ragged for a year. But because of COVID, American Samoa was closed for, I think, about 2.5 years. And they just reopened. And at the end of January 2023, I finally hit my very last park. So that was, that was really exciting. And also, like, talk about an unexpected landscape. I mean, it is, I think it's called a paleotropical rainforest. It's the only paleotropical rainforest that is protected within the U.S. because it's a U.S. territory. I think it's the only national park south of the equator. And there are flying foxes and like incredible frigate birds and like wild animals that you would just never see, not even in Hawaii.
Wow. Okay. So I am totally unfamiliar with a flying fox. What is a flying fox?
Okay. So I'm pretty sure a flying fox is basically just a very large version of a fruit bat. But they fly around during the day. They're not just nocturnal. So you see them on hikes. Like you'll hear a whoosh above your head and you look up and there's this thing that's the size of like, I think their wingspan is like 3 feet long. So like it's the size of like a dog for sure. Just like soaring above you like a little dragon.
Wow. That's crazy. Okay. That's awesome. I'm going to have to look that up now because now I want to see like a video of them.
Yes. Yeah. I'd only seen them in India before. So it was amazing to see them in a U.S. territory.
Wow. Okay. So now that you've done that like amazing whirlwind park tour, what is it that you see yourself conquering next?
At the moment, I'm taking a little bit of a break from doing huge projects that completely upend, you know, my life and my mental health. And I'm taking the opportunities that the Parks trip and my column for Outside Magazine have given me and trying to broaden my reach. So I've been focusing in on becoming more of an international national parks expert in the last year or two. So I got to go to Tanzania and see Serengeti and Ngorongoro Crater last year. I went to Antarctica in December. I got to go to Svalbard and get up close to the North Pole, north of Norway in September, October. So I've been branching out. I have a Patagonia trip later this year, I think. I'm going to the Galapagos in about a week or so. So there's a lot of fun stuff on the horizon, but I have toyed with the idea of throwing a van or a truck on a barge, shipping it to Anchorage, and then like meeting it there, and then and then driving from the very top of Prudhoe Bay to the very tip of Patagonia, so like Alaska to Argentina.
Wow.
And I've been practicing my Spanish. I've been taking Spanish lessons for the last 2 years. And I think that traversing multiple very long mountain ranges and practicing my Spanish and also like doing more of a meandering trip that's not quite as
scheduled.
Yeah, not quite as scheduled as like, okay, I'm doing like 62 national parks. Doing something that's like, okay, I just have to drive from here to here and be mindful of the weather. And I think it'd be a really cool way to meander more, to meet more people, to maybe practice slow travel, which I think that as a type A human, I probably need some more of that. But I also, you know, I'm hoping to move to Colorado this summer, and I think the Colorado Trail would be a fun, slightly more difficult than the JMT through hike.
Wow. So Alaska to Argentina, that's, I mean, that just makes my imagination fire up like nobody's business. That's a really, really cool idea. I like that. But I can't imagine how many oddball issues you would have to go through with crossing all those borders. Does that concern you?
Yeah. The tricky thing is that I would want to take my dog. And so I've had to look into like international rabies vaccine laws and things like that for bringing her even back into the States after crossing through Central America. And then there's also, you know, there's the very real gang violence that's occurring in a lot of Central America at the moment, and being mindful of how to safely and respectfully travel through a few of those countries, especially as a solo female, I think would be possibly the biggest challenge, other than the like wanderlusty loneliness that I think we've all faced.
Right, right. What kind of dog do you have?
He is a black lab German Shepherd Husky mix, and she's 57 pounds, but that's kind of considered a runt for those breeds.
Yeah, yeah, that is kind of small for it, especially when you get the lab in there. And they tend to be kind of chunky sometimes.
Yeah, so she's got she looks a little bit like a shepherd, but she's got a lab personality, and she's very cute.
Ah, so with that, with the trip going from Alaska to Argentina, do you only anticipate, what's your dog's name?
Name's Marla.
Marla. So do you only anticipate taking Marla along for the ride, or do you think that you might have another human traveling companion somewhere along the way?
Well, I think it would be an amazing trip to take with a partner if I had a partner that was location independent, who could work remote the way that I do, because I'm sure, you know, it's, even if I had a book advance, I mean, a project like that would be expensive. And also, like, I, you know, I love writing, so I think I'd want to be working on the road as well. I had a conceit that I felt like the idea at one point in time needed one more rule or quirk to it to make it actually viable for like a book or a series of some sort. And so I had this idea that maybe it could be about like combating the kind of rigid scheduling that my brain likes to cling to, that some people have criticized my Parks book for. And I was thinking, like, what if I had to say yes to any detour as long as it took me south? like what if I met weird hippies in Canada and like had to go to some forest festival in the Yukon, as long as it was slightly south of where I was going.
that's a cute idea. But, you know, even just exploring, sort of, if you're writing or if you were blogging or whatever, just sort of exploring out loud too, that overcoming or maybe not overcoming the type A need to be so driven and scheduled and labeled and all of that, even that edge of a story, I think could make that really interesting, because so many of us, and this is a big reason for me even starting my podcast, it was a way for me to stay connected to the concept of moving at the sun's pace, moving at the pace that my body can take and stuff like that, because it can be so easy once we're in a stream of humanity to get back into that artificial rhythm where we're just gotta go. So I think that maybe, and this is just, you know, this is my opinion, tackling that a little bit might be also helpful to, you know, others who are trying to overcome that need to be at a specific place at a specific time, you know, because that's one of the things that I sometimes wrestle with my partner, because my husband is he calls himself OCD. He's not diagnosed, but he does love to have an agenda. And one of the things that hiking forces us to do is he'll have his agenda. And about 5 minutes into the trip, it's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen that way. You know, nature has other plans for us for whatever reason. So just kind of learning to let go of that need for it to be, to look a specific way, I think could be a really interesting angle, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, I mean, that was kind of like part of the idea was like this notion of like, can a type A traveler be cured? Like, can you teach yourself in your mid 30s to loosen up and go with the flow more? Or is it in some way, I don't know, is it some way ingrained since birth, or like, is it nature nurture? I was really curious about that. One of my good friends always says that anxiety is a bid for control. And so sometimes I try to think about that when I feel like my anxiety is trying to grip a little bit too tightly to reality. And just remember that, especially like you said, especially in the outdoors, I mean, there's so little that you can control. And I think there's so little that you'd want to control by the end of a trip, because there's something like really freeing about surrender and surrendering to, like you said earlier, like the natural light cycles, but also the weather. I think anyone who's through hiked knows that surrendering to whatever the trail has, like you need to make your 10 miles and maybe you're doing a 4,000 vertical foot day. On the JMT, we certainly were multiple days in a row. But yeah, I think there's something really beautiful and freeing about that level of surrender and that level of trust in your mind and your body's ability to weather literal storms, as well as, you know, just the pain of being out in a wild landscape that is not climate controlled or bent to serve our comfort.
Yeah. That's a really good point. And, you know, one of my guests, I've actually had him on the show twice, was on Naked and Afraid.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the things that came out in my initial conversation with him, was that he chose to go through hike the Appalachian Trail after he saw a photo, like a before and after photo of Gary Sizer, who's known as Green Giant. Where he looked emaciated, you know, like bearded and emaciated at the end of his hike. And Reptars, his trail name, Andrew Forrestal, saw that picture and said, oh my God, what did that guy go through? I want to go do that. And I was like, what? Like, just the idea of intentionally putting ourselves into a uncomfortable situation and then just sitting with discomfort can be incredibly freeing, because you're right. When you're in that anxious state of mind, the more you hang on to that anxiety, the more every little thing becomes an irritant and the more and more uncomfortable you actually are.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's a really, really good point.
And I sometimes wonder if, I know like Tim Ferriss talks a lot about this, but there's a big movement, especially in Silicon Valley and coming out of like some of the more, I think, you know, psychology and therapeutic circles in California, at least right now, of people talking about stoicism and talking about this concept of purposefully spending, you know, a week or a month every year living your life in some sort of kind of consciously decided upon discomfort, to, if for no other reason than to remind yourself how little a burden that discomfort actually is, like how happy you can still be if you're like, okay, I'm only spending $20 this week, or, you know, I'm only going to sleep in a tent for this 1 week a year. And just that way you don't fix your mind too hard to a certain version of reality or a certain version of your own or a certain vision of your own economic freedom. there's a lot of like really great writing from, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago about the Stoics and the various things they were doing that I feel are so applicable now as we all live in like air conditioned houses and have you know, supercomputers in our pockets.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great point. So speaking of discomfort, are you ready to put yourself in the hot seat and answer a lightning round of questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. Lightning round. What is your favorite snack in your pack?
Oh gosh, this changes daily because I am like, I'm snack ADD. But okay, one thing I will never turn down is a cheese stick. And I also just got, I just got a sneak preview sample of the female founder of Power Bar from back in the 80s. She just launched a vegan company called Jam Bar, and they are so good, and they have good protein and like and awesome fruit flavors, which I love.
I'm gonna have to check that out. So, do you like to hike in trail runners or boots?
Trail runners for day hikes, trail runners, but like the ones with the high ankles that look like boots for backpacking because my ankles roll.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So do you like to sleep in a hammock or a tent?
Oh, definitely a tent. Hammock people are crazy.
I am a hammock person.
Oh, no. I was going to say I trust them.
That's funny. You don't trust hammocks or hammock people?
I don't trust hammock people. I don't know. I feel like my back would get janky, but I also was in the circus for 5 years. So my back just is janky.
You were in the circus for 5 years.
Yeah. My next book is going to be a circus memoir.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm going to keep an eye out for that. As you've been out there exploring in so many different places, what is your favorite trail name that you've heard?
Okay. I heard an awesome trail name because it had a good story behind it. I hiked up onto the PCT near Los Angeles a few years ago and hiked in a bunch of like fresh fruit and vegetables because I had heard that that's what everyone craves. And I met this guy named Sherlock, and he got his name because he had hiked on the Appalachian Trail. And in one of the shelters somewhere along the AT, I think they were noticing that things were going missing. And the guy who was the purveyor of the shelter or the groundskeeper in some capacity was kind of shady. And anyway, through, I don't know, some like long story short, he like Sherlocked his way into like saving everyone's stuff that was going missing by like calling out the dude because he like put together all the clues, you know, like Sherlock Holmes. And so I thought that was such a great trail name with a great story. And what a sweet guy. Cause then now, you know, you can right. count on that guy.
Okay. Awesome. So when you're out there on the trail and you were talking a little bit about the loneliness that can sometimes accompany wanderlust, do you like to listen to music or podcasts or books when you're out and you're getting to that moment?
It's not like a prescribed system, but I have a little bit of a system. I think if I'm feeling particularly emotional, I tend to like music because it's nonlinear and it kind of just lets me, it lets my mind kind of just flow through whatever it's feeling. If I want to feel like I'm hanging out with friends and I want to like laugh, I'll throw on like Conan O'Brien's podcast or John and Hank Green have a great questions podcast. I'll throw on like something kind of comedic so I can just kind of like crunch out the miles and feel like, okay, like this is happy. But then also like, I think on the JMT, I actually listen to a lot of audiobooks because I think when you're putting in long miles day after day and it almost starts to feel like your day job is hiking, I think it can be really awesome to feel like you're also learning in addition to traversing these beautiful landscapes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you have a book so far that you've listened to that is a standout for you?
I mean, I kind of wish I listened to this while hiking because it would have been awesome. But I just listened to the Hunger Games trilogy, and they're written in first person present tense female voice narrative, which I know sounds like a mouthful, but basically it's like, I'm going over here and the light is like this, and then I'm doing this, And it's very, it's so present. And it, like, she's a hunter, she's a trapper. You know, there's a lot of survivalist stuff when they're in the arenas. So I actually feel like those books are like, I mean, they're amazing sci-fi, but they also have a lot of kind of outdoorsy elements. And so I listened to those on a series of road trips that I've been doing for the last few months. But I think they would have been excellent trail books.
Okay, great. So when you're out there navigating, do you like to use an app to navigate or an old school paper map or a combination?
I used to use paper maps, and I did take a map and compass class when I first started. But honestly, the apps have gotten so good. And if I'm doing a long hike, I will hike with a small battery pack to charge my phone. So yeah, I really like Gaia GPS. And then I did use, I think the name changed, Guthook. Is it still Guthook? Mm-hmm. I used that one when
it's,
I was...
It's called Far Out now.
That's what it was. Yeah, I think I used that one when I was on the JMT, because for... through hiking, when you need to know your water sources and the quality of those water sources in drought-ridden California, it's really helpful to have a slightly more specific app.
When you're out there traversing, do you like to caffeinate? And do you like to caffeinate with coffee or tea or something else?
I definitely like to caffeinate. I had to go through a phase. Anyone who's read the book or even like skimmed through it will know that it's no secret that my body just stopped sleeping as a trauma response at the end of my parks journey when I was coming back into the city. And I think the somatic, the weird somatic energy of the city that we've talked about already, I think was very overwhelming to someone who had been sleeping in the wilderness for a year. So I did have to take a coffee break for a year and a half. But I think I was still doing tea when I hiked the JMT, but now I'm back on coffee and I'm loving it.
Hello, coffee, my old friend.
Oh my gosh, it's so much better.
Okay, so what, I mean, we talked a little bit about the next road trip that you want to do. What's the next trail that you want to explore?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm going to Sedona for the first time in a couple of weeks with a girlfriend, and she's a big hiker too. So we're going to be exploring some of the cool, probably touristy, red rocky trails in Sedona. But in terms of like, bigger trails that I have my eye on, I'm like I said, I'm moving to Colorado this summer for at least 3 or 4 months, if not hopefully longer. I know there's a really amazing backpacking trip outside of Carbondale to Hot Springs with a cool mountain view of the Rockies. That's a trail I really want to backpack. I want to spend some more time in Rocky Mountain National Park because I didn't get into the tundra because the road was still closed due to snow plowing when I went in 2020. So I want to explore some of the more upper elevation parts of the park. I think it's really incredible that you can have, you know, very accessible alpine environments. It's really cool that you can have a road that goes to 12,000 feet in Colorado. So I want to explore more of that. And I don't know, maybe if I can like throw my anxiety into like a closet for a day, maybe I'll find a friend who'll take me up Long's Peak or something.
Okay. So you talked a little bit about water sources, the quality of the water sources. What kind of filter do you like to use?
I use the Sawyer Mini. It's like never really steered me wrong. On the JMT, I've had them get clogged for sure. But on the JMT, my friend that I was hiking with, she said that she just treats it like a piece of gear that you have to replace every year or two. And that way she doesn't get butt hurt when it does get clogged. She was like, yeah, this is just like, it's like shoes. Like, you know, you use it a bunch and then you might need a new one. And I was like, oh, that's a great way of thinking about it because it's not that expensive. Then you never have to worry about it clogging, which if, in my experience, they inevitably do, but it's so lightweight and easy. And I've liked it.
Okay. And on that same note, how is it that you want to continue to become more unfiltered in your life?
Well, I think that going on such a big journey that wasn't technically a through hike, but it did have me hiking 5 or 6 days every single week for an entire year. So I think there was a reckoning that I had to go through at the end of that, which was not only prioritizing my mental health more, but also learning that the go, go, go type A scheduling that we've talked about is not always what's best for my mental health, even if that's what my anxiety wants me to do. And so I think that getting honest with myself, well, writing really fearlessly about it in the book, and then getting really honest with myself about it, and like doing a deep dive on what is important to me, like moving forward in life, I think has all served to make me like a more compassionate and patient person. And so one of the challenges that I am going into 2023 with, or one of the things that I want to invoke more of in kind of the unfiltered part of my life is allowing myself the courage to like very honestly share mental health struggles that I've had, you know, while adventuring and while being in the outdoors. I think that I would like my struggles to serve as some sort of a beacon for other people who experience anxiety, but maybe still want to go on solo hikes, or women who really want to go on a big road trip, but don't have a partner that wants to come with. I think that if I, with a diagnosed anxiety disorder, can do big things, even when I'm scared, then I would like to serve as some sort of a, I don't know, some sort of like a weird, funky little gremlin model that, that other people can and should get out and like reap the benefits of big wilderness adventures. And so, yeah, so as scary as it can be sometimes, like being really honest and coming out early and often about mental health is on my to-do list for 2023.
I love that. And absolutely, the more we talk about it, and a very large portion of my episodes that I've done so far have been very much centered around mental health. I think the more that we talk about it and take away the stigma around mental health, or around talking about mental health, it's not even just the thing. It's like the conversation even can be a stigmatized, you know? So I think that being an advocate for that open and honest and transparent communication around it, that is absolutely the first step to any kind of healing, you know, process. So I really, I admire that, and I really respect you for doing that. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done was admitting to myself that I could no longer trust my brain's narrative, because the anxiety had gotten to such a high that I needed to push pause and listen to doctors and like get on medication. And it was so terrifying. And then, you know, within a couple of months, I felt mostly like myself again. And that is the strange modern magic that I think we can sometimes jump into if we can throw our egos aside long enough to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That sounds like a good book title, Strange Modern Magic.
Yeah. Oh, man. Maybe when I'm like in my 50s, I can do like a deep dive on like all of the mental health things and weird therapeutic hippie modalities that I'm sure I'm gonna dabble in between now and then.
Right. There you go. All right. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your story. And once more, I'll put it in the show notes, but once more, what is the name of your book?
My name, the name of my book is called Feral: Losing Myself and Finding My Way in America's National Parks.
And where can people find that?
My publisher is actually owned by Amazon, because what don't they own these days? So Amazon.com is actually the best place to get it. And it's not in too many stores. So don't feel bad about supporting Jeff Bezos, because that's actually the place to go.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I wish you the best of luck on the next major adventure.
Oh, thank you so much. This was wonderful. And thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Didn't I tell you that she is a remarkable young woman? I mean, she's young and she has traveled all over the world. And not only has she traveled all over the world, she's done a lot of it completely solo, which just blows my mind. I was definitely not that bold at her age. So I'm filled with admiration and respect, and I can't wait to hear about her next big adventure, that trip from Alaska to Argentina. I mean, how amazing would that be? I have links for you in the show notes if you want to check out Emily's book, Feral. And there's also a link in there. You can follow her adventures on Instagram. I am also looking for new guests to have on the show. If you know somebody who you think would make a really interesting guest or has an amazing hiking story, I would love to talk to them. I'd also really love to talk to more people who have gone on trail with dogs in tow, because I'd love to hear a little bit more about how to navigate a long distance hike with a canine companion. If you know somebody like that, please have them reach out to me. Thanks for joining me once again. If you are enjoying this podcast, or maybe it's even just the first time you've heard it, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out to me at hikingunfiltered@gmail.com. Tell me about your topic ideas, your guest suggestions, or maybe you would like to be a guest on the podcast. I love it if you gave me a shout out on your socials. You'll find links to my socials in the show notes. I am Hiking Unfiltered on Facebook and on Instagram. You can find me there, and I'd love to interact with you there. Can I ask you a favor? Please leave me a review, some stars, to help other people know that the podcast exists. Show them how to subscribe as well. You're going to find links in the show notes to the show sponsors that were mentioned. Go check them out. It does help support the show. That's it for this episode. Until next time, my trail family, happy trails.